It's about the jury. It's the process to create the jury pool.
Okay, we're back on the air. Congresswoman Goodfox.
Motion to adopt the committee's substitute for bill number ONCA 1979, dated September 16th at 1:23 p.m.
Okay, we have a motion for a committee substitute and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carries. Okay, Congresswoman Stabler.
Thank you. Well, as I stated before, we had several comments, and they've now been incorporated into this bill. Part of the discussion was that this particularly pertains to domestic violence cases. There was a lot of discussion about how a jury was selected, so there's several levels of criteria here that will go out to a certain radius of miles around from the court. There are specifics to the as to the court's process of how they're going to do this. Random selection, who provides the information, how the court would handle the jury itself, and even going so far as if we have to sequester a jury and all those things. So it was a smaller bill, and now it's a much larger bill, but I think it gives a lot more meat to what the court was needing and what the AG was asking for.
Thank you, Congresswoman. And I am glad both judicial and AG's office was involved. With that being said, we have had extensive talk over this piece of legislation. Are there any questions on the amendments that have been made? Congressman Maker.
Yes, thank you, Chair. On Section B there, A, line 46, says 50-mile radius. I thought we settled on a 75-mile radius. 50 is not going to include Tulsa County. I don't think we have a lot of Osage tribal members living in Tulsa. Would that include Tulsa County?
It would include the north end of Tulsa County, if I could answer, please. It would include the north section of Tulsa County, a lot of the employees at the casino. It'll also stretch us out past Bartlesville to Ponca. It goes north some into Kansas. Mm-hmm. You have to think of the full radius. As far as having a number of the Osages that are in that area, I haven't done that research to see how many that includes, but it should include quite a pool for us to cover from. It also includes not just Osages living within our housing groups and in the villages, but it also includes other people living in those housing sections. So other tribal members, non-tribal members that might be spouses, things like that.
We also have tribal members living in South Tulsa, not just North Tulsa.
If the committee wants to amend, I have no problem with the amendment. I just felt like it was getting really big.
Mr. Potts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have an amendment to offer. Page 1, line 46, strike 50, and insert 75.
Second.
Okay. You've heard the discussion. Amendment on the table with a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Okay. Going back to the committee substitute and the amendments that have been proposed, are there any further questions?
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Congresswoman Stabler and the
has sold us in here somewhere, I was just looking for it, but to the possibility, which would be a huge possibility, if the jurors are related to, where did I see that?
It is in a couple of places. Lines 88 through 90 refers to relationship, I believe.
Was that changed from the original?
I believe it just has a little bit more expressive wording to it.
Congressman Potts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On page 4, L gives instructions for the juries or jurors to be impaneled. It's their duty not to converse among themselves outside of the jury pool. And I see before it in K and J, there are penalties for violating your oath. Is there an oath somewhere that I've missed, or what? Essentially, I was trying to find out what penalties are in there to clearly delineate what's going to happen if a juror violates part of this established law, not just an oath that may or may not exist right now. The oath may be in there, I'm not seeing it.
What do they commit?
Right.
How do they commit? You know, just says the jury shall be sworn in by the court. Doesn't say what the wording will be, just that they will be sworn in.
Right, but then in that sentence in K, sorry, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Any juror who violates the oath. So I don't see an oath. So does the
oath? There's no wording for an oath listed. That's it. Just they will be sworn in.
So you're saying
that you think it should, the bill should compel an oath?
I don't know what the proper procedure would be for that, whether or not the oath needs to be stated or if the penalty in Section L would be stating, this, you violated it, here's a penalty.
I really couldn't answer to that. Maybe we should ask legislative counsel.
Mr. Gill, are you back there? I believe by taking that oath, by being sworn in, you are under oath.
That's the way I took it, so that's what I don't know.
There he is.
I don't know if we're compelled to place an oath in here. I think just that the court swears them in.
You want to state your question to
Mr. Gill?
Do you have a copy of the committee substitute of 1979 in front of you?
K and L is what I'm looking at.
Okay. So my question was on page 4, section L. It talks about the jury being impaneled and then limits their ability to discuss a case outside of that I'm familiar with. But my question was, what's the penalty if they do speak about the case outside of? Is that all determined by the court? Because my next thought is, well, that's penalty is going to be governed by Section K that says the jury shall be sworn in by the court, and any juror who violates the oath may be upheld in contempt. So the penalty for talking outside with another juror or someone else is penalized by Section K, but nowhere do we state the oath that would be sworn by the court. So does that oath need to be stated somewhere, or is it implicit?
Being sworn in is the oath.
I don't know the answer to that question. I have to look and see if there's in some other place in the court procedure, if there is an oath actually stated. If not, it would be up to the court to satisfy itself that the people have sworn to uphold their duties as a juror after those duties have been explained to them.
Is that the normal practice? Because I'm totally fine with that if it is. I just want to make sure that they're covered there.
Is it normal for jurors to be sworn?
Well, no. Is it normal for that to be understood, that whatever they swear, they're swearing to uphold all of this that's in law? I guess what I'm trying to ask is...
I don't quite understand your question. I mean...
Are we going to get into a case where a juror talks about this, a case, outside of who they're able to talk with as defined by Section L, and we don't have a penalty for that? Or does the penalty in K cover it?
Yeah, the penalty in K is what they would be subject to, and it would be up to the judge to decide how long that jail penalty or civil penalty...
Perfect.
I mean, fine would be.
I'm good with that.
All right, thank you.
Congresswoman Whitehorn.
On that same page, on J, it's just really not our convention just to put $50 in there. We write out 50 and do the parenthetical numerical equivalent. Also down below, 1,000 in caps. I was just going to have them change the letter into lowercase.
The 1,000 in caps is consistent with the way that we put penalties in the criminal code. Mm-hmm. If you look at all the penalties, they're generally... In the code itself, they're that way. I'm not sure if they are in the legislation. I'll have to check on that. But I can do that through the engrossment process without any issue. Same with the $50.
So will you make a note of that?
Sure.
Congressman Maker.
Yeah, I just have, this is kind of a small thing, but they're on paragraph K. Line 149 says tribal jail. We do not currently have a tribal jail. Technically, I know we use the county jail as our holding facility, but so does the public know, or whoever reads this know that's what that means? Tribal jail is the same thing as
actually,
the county jail.
Actually, I'll defer to Mr. Gill right now, and I'll follow up if he doesn't answer.
Mr. Gill.
The term tribal jail is consistently used in our code. All the penalties in the criminal code as well say tribal jail. It makes sense to keep it consistent in that term because the contract could change in the future from Osage County to some other place. And so it's the tribal jail in the sense that we contract with an outside, you know, third party to hold our prisoners.
Thank you.
Mr. Gill.
Congressman Potts.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Section 3 of this bill establishes an alternate effective date, effective upon signature. Should we bump that back a little bit?
That's a matter of preference.
Congresswoman Stabler and then Congressman Potts.
So could you help me understand what your question is now or what your reasoning is?
Mr. Chair, the reasoning for bumping it back a little bit would be we're establishing that there's going to be rules, there's going to be policy, there's going to be, all these things that are established by this law that aren't currently in place. If the alternate effective date is immediately upon signature by the chief and these things aren't in place, there's reason to extend it for 30 days or 60 days so that these things can be typed up and be made known to the public. I'm not trying to delay it. I'm trying to make it work where we're not going to get in a case where somebody demands a jury trial tomorrow and we're not ready.
Congresswoman.
This is an issue right now. There is a trial set for November. So there's only a short period of time for them to get that done. But I think that is their drive to get this done so that they will have it for the case coming up. I don't know if that's how they would answer it, but that's the fact that I know is that that's one of the reasons they were anxious to get this one in this session.
Any further question?
Just real quick.
Congressman Tillman.
Following along with what we were talking about, with the J
judge and the jurors and this, that, and the other. And I know sequestrations are rare, but they could happen. Is there any plan to talk about jury sequestration just in case that could happen? And I can see it happening, but.
There's several things that are encompassed in this, and both the code bill that's going to be coming pretty soon too, and that is over contracts with the county court because if we start having more lengthy stays, the increase of what the VAWA bill gave us to be able to increase fines and penalties, it's going to cause an increase in the dollars that are going to have to be spent for that. And the same thing with sequestration. It's going to have to be contracts set in place, something to handle those. Uh-huh. So I think we're going to let that more be policy on the court side. Am I right? We can do that. We can allow that to come through policy, I believe.
But yes.
Okay.
As long as they budget.
Okay. Any further questions? Congresswoman Whitehorn?
Well, I'm referring to Section 2 about the Section 3 where it says deadlines submit additional data, updated data. The entity supplying the data of the court to the court administrator must submit the initial data within 14 days of the effective date of this act. Subsequent updates must be provided within 14 days upon the request of the court administrator. So that's kind of what gives me concern. We're placing it out in law that membership, and I don't know who else is going to be responsible for gathering the data, such as the people who live in the villages. And down at the casinos, all the employees. That seems like a pretty tall order of on signature of the chief to be able to get all of that data. I'm not saying people are incapable. So I would support a thought of an effective date, a different effective date than on signature of the chief. Just kind of
Congresswoman Stanger.
Maybe for some of those that would be okay. There's already a process in place and going on currently that they are receiving data every month. I know that's from membership. I know it's not coming from the villages right now, but that's a small feat for them. As far as housing and stuff, that would take a little bit of time. So I have no problem with altering the date. I just don't want to make it ineffective for the court.
I just was thinking about that. I don't even know who's going to be responsible for the village data. Whose purview does that fall under?
Congresswoman Stabler.
It would fall under the committees, the village committees. And really, that when you look at the villages, there's small populations in Gray Horse and Hominy. Pawhuska would probably be the most difficult, and they do keep a database going out there. So.
Any further question? Any movement? Congresswoman Goodfox.
Motion to report Bill number ONCA 1979, committee substitute to Congress with the due pass as amended.
I have a motion.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you to the committee.
Thank you, Congresswoman. Item number 9, Congresswoman Goodfox.
Motion to postpone consideration of ONCA 1982 to the call of the chair.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Item number 10, Congressman Potts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually had signed on as a co-author for ONCA 1982. My apologies for stepping away from the table. We've considered it once in committee, I believe, and I'm ready to move on it if the committee is. Is there any desire to go back to item number 9?
A motion and see if you get a second.
Make a motion to reconsider ONCA 1982.
A motion on the table?
Second.
Congressman Paltz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. ONCA 1982 is just simply removing, I'm discussing on it. ONCA 1982 just simply removes the portion of code that is in code that needs to be gone. I don't know that there's any structural changes to how that section of law, being 19 ONC 3106, would change drastically. So I hope we can go consider it.
Okay, you've heard explanation. Any question? Congressman Maker?
Well, I don't recall that wording or lines or section of paragraph, how large it is that's going to be deleted from this law. Do we have that? Can we look at that? And could you, the sponsor, show us what's going to be deleted from this law?
Give us just a moment. We'll see if we can pull it up.
Is it going to affect any dollar amounts, you know, to the treasurer's office?
Congressman Potts and then Congresswoman Goodfox.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have, it would have no impact on dollar amounts. It would just simply delete the portions of the Workforce Pay for Performance Act that we're not currently following.
Congresswoman Goodfox.
I just want to vote on either bringing it back to talk about and putting it back on the agenda or moving on to the next piece of legislation. So I call for the question.
Okay, call for the question. Do I have a second?
Congresswoman Wyo, have your hand up.
Before
the motion.
I'll wait to get a second on that. I just had a question.
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Congresswoman Whitehorn.
What's the motion on the floor? To put this back on the agenda now. We postponed it to the call of the chair. We voted on it. It passed. Now there's a motion to bring it back for consideration right now with the second.
Congressman Potts.
So you've already covered it on today's agenda today?
Postponed.
It was postponed
back on
today.
Okay. All those in favor of placing ONCA 1982 back on today's agenda signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Me.
Okay, back on ONCA 1982. Congressman Potts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. ONCA 1982, may have to check with the clerk to see if we've actually amended it in the first time we considered it, because I'm not seeing anything, but I know that we've discussed it. But ONCA 1982 was simply to delete the portions of the Workforce Pay for Performance Act that are not a part of normal practice in our appropriations process. Yeah, if we've made amendments, can we?
Congresswoman Goodfox.
So the reason that I wanted to postpone was because when I spoke with the sponsor early on, and I heard language like, well, this is just to do, you know, take this little part out that we're not following. I said, well, great. Then let's take out the job descriptions that we know are unconstitutional that's set in here all this time. Okay, well, I'll do that too. My concern here is that we've never heard from anyone on the executive side. I would love to have the HR director here because that person might say, well, could you also take out this and this which we're not following also, which to me, we're kind of, I haven't heard from the sponsor. So if you've been a part of all those meetings that she's been a part of, then you should be able to speak on it. But without hearing from the HR director, there could possibly be two or three other things that they're not following that need to come out, but we've never heard. They've never been invited down here, and that's my concern.
And I will say that...
To me, this is the epitome of what, yes, piecemeal of taking stuff out. But we haven't heard from executive at all. I haven't. So I'm not going to vote yes to pass this out of committee.
And
not hearing from the executive.
When I spoke to Congresswoman Edwards, I did ask her, because I had lengthy conversation with Congresswoman Goodfox over this, because we were both trying to work on it last year. And I asked Congresswoman Edwards at that time to please get with Congresswoman Goodfox, because she was working with HR. And I don't know whether that ever took place. She hasn't been here. Congressman Potts.
Mr. Chair, I get it. I understand. All I know is that there are parts of this law that we are not adhering to. I think they need to be gone. And I don't know that we need to hear from executive to do the business of the Congress here at this table.
Congresswoman Goodfox.
There are probably, and I don't know that all of the parts that we aren't adhering to are included in this. There's my problem, and no one can give me an answer to it. No one has been able to give me an answer to that. That's my concern, is that there are possibly more things within Bill Number ONCA 1982 that we are not adhering to. So I feel like we're rushing through it to, and I don't know that there aren't more things.
And I will say, Congresswoman Goodfox and HR has pulled every piece of legislation and all of the policies to go over them, and have been doing that for approximately 2 months that I know of. Speaker Tillman.
I'd make a motion to postpone ONCA 1982 to the call of the chair.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed?
Aye.
Okay, moving on to item number 10, consideration of ONCA 1985, an act to establish minimum standards to benefit Osage Nation employees and the work environment, and to establish an alternate effective date. The sponsor is Congressman Potts. Congressman Potts, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. ONCA 1985 is pretty straightforward. It's establishing an Employee Rights Act. This was born out of seeing and hearing from members of our workforce that are working in 80-degree heat, that have medical conditions, that are being told, no, we can't do comp time, you gotta stay here, gotta power through. Upon putting pen to paper on a simple indoor air quality or indoor air requirement to maintain a certain temperature in our buildings, it needed more, and so it evolved into an Employee Rights Act, where we cover communication, compensation, harmless work environment, healthcare, indoor air requirements. We address political activity, reporting, workforce advancement, and workplace safety. All it does is say that policies and procedures have to adhere to this. It's not setting policy in law. It's saying that these are minimum standards that policies of the nation have to meet. I can elaborate on any of the section or any of the parts in Section 3. I believe there's good reasoning for each one of them to be there. I'm happy to walk through each letter at a time if you'd like, or discuss the ones that anybody would like to discuss off the top.
Congressman Baker.
Did you say speaking to the sponsor, you had some actual complaints from employees, or maybe someone had collapsed under a severe heat in working environment. Have we had a medical emergency that's happened?
Congressman Potts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know of any specific employees collapsing or anything, but one example occurred in our branch of government. When I was an employee, there were two or three days where it was, 60 degrees in our office, and we were told, stay home. That's too cold for employees to be expected to work. After that, this body came together and passed emergency legislation to get us a new HVAC unit on top of the hill. Sitting there currently doing a good job, keeping the buildings cool and keeping them warm. So that standard, or that minimum standard, I believe should be applied to all of our employees. It shouldn't be dependent on whether or not employees in the legislative branch and whether or not they get comp time if their AC or heater goes out, versus if you're in the executive branch, you got to power through. Specifically, I think the wording in that says, I can look at it real quick. Reason shall offer the employees a temporary office location that complies with the temperature requirement, or allow the employee to be paid administrative leave until the extreme temperature problem is resolved. So it's just trying to provide a right to an employee that if it's 80 degrees in your office, we're not expecting you to sit at your desk and do a job right now. We're going to find somewhere else for you to do your job.
Congresswoman Goodfox.
So I haven't heard of any complaints at all either. And I understand where Congressman Potts is coming from with his side of everyone within the nation, whether you work for executive, judicial, or legislative, should have the same process or protocol for when an AC breaks or the heater breaks. I have heard from employees who oppose this legislation because they think that it is not the congressional branch's business to write policy and procedure for the executive branch. They've been very vocal about that. They're not saying that they're for it not being in policy and procedure, but they feel very strongly that this is policy and procedure, and that needs to be written by the executive branch. So, of course, there are two opinions on this. I may be a no vote on the floor, but just like a piece of legislation that I talked about earlier, I'm also not willing to hold it hostage in committee. So I would be for sending it out with no recommendation to get it on the floor for a vote. That's where I stand with it.
Congressman Potts and then Congressman Mulk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I understand that. I respectfully disagree. I don't think that this is establishing policy in law. As you can see in Section 4, it clearly says that government entities must adopt policies applicable throughout this jurisdiction relating to the minimum standards. So what it's saying is the executive branch policies have to adhere to these standards. It's not setting these as the policy of the nation. It's not it. It's very similar, or in other words, if this were the policy of the nation, if it were up to executive branch, why wouldn't it be in place? And I think that that's our job at this table to say, here's the minimum of what your policies are going to say, because we're at least going to provide this standard of work environment for our employees. And I think if we leave it up to policy for a minimum standard to be established, then it's exactly what I always say at this table. Policy can be changed by the next administration. So if the next administration comes in and says, well, I'm going to make my employees work in 98 degree heat, well, that's not okay. That has to be protected by Osage law. And that's why I'm trying to establish these minimum standards in law that say you can have whatever policy you want, but it has to adhere to these. Your policy can state that you want people to be in X degree heat, if you want your executive branch policy to say that, but it has to adhere to these minimum standards. So I don't think that this is establishing policy and procedure and law in any way.
Congressman Walker.
How did you come up with 68 and 76 as the standard or minimums?
That's a great question. That's what Trey came up with. I'm more than willing to amend it if we think we can go colder or hotter.
Well, when it's from 68 to 76, you can sit around in shorts and a t-shirt. I mean, if it's 58 or 86, I can see that, but there has to be OSHA standards that are in place that aren't just arbitrary 68 and 76. 68 and 76, that's, that's soft fill right there.
I have something real quick, then I'm more than happy to have Trey.
Congressman Potts, and then Trey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Congressman Walker. You hit the nail on the head. This is exactly something similar to what OSHA is, which is a federal law. So that's the model for this, and I believe I asked Legislative Council to use that as a model for how we draft this legislation. There's nothing that's an encroachment on executive policy on this. It's establishing standards, very similar to how other jurisdictions have done it. But as far as 68 to 72 degrees, Trey, that's yours.
I was just going to say that this is the OSHA recommendation, but they don't have it. Actually, they haven't officially adopted that standard of 68 to 76 degrees, but it's what they recommend and have for about a decade, I guess. And obviously, we're talking about indoor air quality, not
correct
anything outside.
Congressman Potts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm more than willing to go for an amendment. I don't think a 2 or 3 degree temperature change is reason to not pass this out and protect our employees.
Congressman Walker.
Right. Well, I don't know how I feel about this, truthfully. I mean, if we want to get in and saying, you know, well, they're against it, you're not in favor of protecting employees, that's going a bit too far. I mean, I think the real question is whether or not this is a legislative, if this is really supposed to be in our house, I would definitely don't think 68 and 76 should be the minimums and maximums. I'd be up for an amendment with that, and I would even offer one up. As far as recommendations from OSHA, I'm sure that's the ideal work environment is 68 to 76, but I don't think that those are the minimums and maximums in that are put out by OSHA. In fact, I think they're quite a bit lesser and greater than that, truthfully.
Congressman Potts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Congressman Walker, I tend to agree. I don't know that this is something that should be in our house, but I think that it rises to the occasion of being in our house. The same as how OSHA was brought about, how other occupational safety regulations have been brought about. They weren't just brought about at random. They were brought about because there was a need that was not being fulfilled by executive branch policies or practices and any normal regulation. That's what brought it to the attention of every other legislative body to act. And that's exactly what I'm bringing to the table here. And I can walk through each of these sections and give you reasonings that I've heard from constituents that I've experienced as an employee of the nation of reasoning for this minimum standard to be placed in law. So, optimistically, we don't need this. But I can cite and give you specific examples of dates where we do need this, because we do have employees that are being told to work in 80-degree heat. We have employees as part of A for communication, the employee's right to report to and communicate with elected and appointed officials of all branches of government shall not be obstructed. I bet we can all talk about instances where an employee's right to communicate with members of this body has been obstructed. So I would agree that we shouldn't have to act on this, but I think it's risen to the point that we do have to act on this. And that's just one. We can go through all of these, and I'm more than happy to.
Congressman Walker?
I've read the bill, and I was an employee for 10 years. And so, and you were an employee as well.
Mm-hmm.
Just putting on my employee hat, I don't really know how else to say it, but if I was an employee, still an employee, I would roll my eyes at this, truthfully. That's just the way I feel about it. And 80 degrees isn't excessive, and 65 is. I mean, so if we move it from 76 to 80 or even 68 to 65, I'm curious to know what the minimums, not the ideal work environment established by OSHA, but the minimums and the maximums are. But anyway, I don't care to go through every section. Like I said, I've read the bill. It's most of the language is pretty generic. I mean, I don't mean that in a bad way, but the only real thing that gets into details are the 60, 68 and 76. Other than that, it's just, I guess, each of us is kind of philosophy on what our role is in this government, on whether or not you vote yes or no. So.
Congressman Maker?
Yes, I agree that our employees really need to be taken care of. They're keeping our government working and going. But I remember back in the day when, before air conditioning, and they were issued fans and space heaters, you know, in emergencies. So it's good that we can have this discussion to take care of our employees. Thank you.
Congressman Tillman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, looking at this, I think it's the first time in my little over 3 years I've seen piece of legislation be presented to this committee that says it's an Employee Rights Act. It is an act. It should be an act of Congress is what that is. And I do, and I'm sitting here, and I understand the conversation of are we getting into the business of the executive branch? And I think we've been reminded constantly from some Supreme Court decisions that, you know, are we going to go here again? So, I would like to find out, are we crossing that line by voting yes or no on this? I don't know that. I don't know if anybody here at the table can tell us that. Is that another Supreme Court decision that's going to have to come down? I don't know. But I will say, and I've read the bill too, and I'd be really interested as you go through here, when you get to Section C, and you say you have some documentation or you have some testimony on each of these, I think there's nine of them that relate to each of the letters going through, like the harmless work environment, the political activity, the reporting, that's an interesting one to me, and how that works. I think if you get down into some of the details, and that's what we're here for in this committee, is to discuss these. But again, you know, you say that, I just don't know for me which way to go, but I will say one thing, and this is a fact, one of the new buildings where the membership or the had to go up and get a tag office up on the hill, and this was back in, and I don't know when those buildings were built, 2015, somewhere in there. And it was a hot summer day, and I walked in there, and I was like, this is crazy. This is hot. What happened to the air conditioners? And they said, it's been this way for a couple of days. It was 90 degrees in that building. And I'm not going to say any names, but there were people that saying, I've got pregnant ladies in here that need to go home, and I've got people with diabetes that should not be here. They're going to be sick. Now, I didn't get any further of, well, what are you doing about that? But I do know for a fact that it went up to the thermostat. It was 90 degrees in that building, and they were red-faced. And I went and got a bunch of ice rags and an ice chest and took it up there. And they put the ice rags and the ice around their necks, and it was unbearable. It was unbearable. And it was one of the new buildings, and the air conditioner went out. But that was one case with the temperature. How long did that last? I think it was an additional 2 or 3 days because the company that was fixing the air conditioning was in California. We went down and looked at the guts of that thing, and I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it's a monster, the component, the air conditioning component. So I do know that for a fact. But some of these employees have the right to report and or convey concern about harassment of any kind. I don't know if you know something that I don't. But I, too, have heard whispers. I think we've all heard some whispers about different, I guess you call it harassment or improper workplace relations, whatever that may be. But if you have additional information, I wouldn't mind going through each one of these by the letter and listening to you how you came up with these. That's what I'm interested in.
Can you yield to Congressman Whitehorn?
Congresswoman Whitehorn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for recognizing me. I support this bill. It was probably 5 years ago that I've received calls and requests. Somebody called it an employee bill of rights and suggested that we have one for our nation's employees, and I think it's very important. I think that this body is the only body that has the duty and obligation to set that out in law. And Section 4 talks about the policies. Those will hang off of this law. They have to conform to the standards, the minimum standards set forth in the law. There's examples of it in state law, federal law. But the thing about it is, if we don't have a law that's pointed to the North Star, if we don't have that there, if our employees have issues and go to tribal court, there's no law to cover these issues. It's only set out in policy. Policy can change. As far as I've been told, there's nothing unlawful about not following your policy, because I've heard several times before, oh, that's just a policy. So I've read through this. I think that it should be explored a little deeper than just, I think we should look at it and decide if it is relevant. But I support this being set out in law, and then the executive, judicial, and legislative branches have a standard for what their policies are written around. Thank you.
Congressman Foss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Specifically to Speaker Tillman's question of whether or not I have documentable proof or anything that I'm going to bring forward. No, I don't. And I don't know that that would be helpful to the cause. But what I do know is my personal experience and what's been communicated by employees of the nation as to what's formulated each one of these. We can walk through them if we'd like. Communication. The employee's right to report and communicate with an elected and appointed official of all branches of the government shall not be obstructed. I have had employees come to me and say, we can't talk to you about this. We can't tell you about that. We can't report that to an individual. That's not okay. Your policies cannot discourage another employee from bringing something to light, and I think that that needs to be addressed. Compensation. Employees must be compensated in accordance with Osage law for work completed and by terms agreeable to all parties involved. This is personal experience as well. As an employee of the nation, one day you're an exempt employee, the next day you're a non-exempt employee, your availability of comp time has changed, and it was by no action of your own. I think that that's fine. Each branch of government can still do that, but it has to be on terms that are agreeable to all parties involved, meaning if you're an employee of the nation, they're at least going to come tell you what they're doing. And I think that that's a minimum standard that we should be able to adhere to. On a harmless work environment, the nation must maintain policies that establish a work environment that is free from physical harassment, personal harassment, discriminatory harassment, psychological harassment, cyberbullying, and sexual harassment. Harassment of any type by elected or appointed officials shall not be tolerated, and reports deemed sincere by the Human Resources Department shall be forwarded to the Attorney General for action in accordance with Osage law. I think our policies already do this. But again, what's the policy of this administration could be changed by the next administration, unless there's a standard and law that all policies have to adhere to. So by passing something like this, it guarantees that we will never have an environment, and I'm not saying that we do now, but it guarantees that we will never now or in the future have an environment where an employee has to worry about any of these types of harassment. With regard to health care, employees eligible for health care through the nation's policies and as allowed by Osage law shall not be refused access to quality health care on a basis of pre-existing or congenital conditions. Taken straight from everywhere that we've heard about health care policy currently going on as a discussion in our nation. Nobody's going to be refused a right to health care if you are eligible per the policies of the nation that are established. An employee has a right to know that. With the indoor air requirements, we've pretty well read through that one, but Speaker Tillman, your story is exactly the reasoning for this section. The comfort of our employees should not be dependent on a member of Congress taking cool rags down to make sure that our employees aren't working in 90-degree heat. That's a standard. That's a minimum standard. And that's not every day that that's happening. But we can ensure our employee base that it's not going to happen again. That's all Section E would do. Section F for political activity. Employees have an absolute right, except as provided for in Osage law, to participate in political activities free from retribution. Employees must refrain from political activities or stating political opinions during normal business hours of the nation or while conducting business on behalf of the nation. The employee is prohibited from stating their political beliefs in a manner that reflects their employment position with the nation. I reviewed this with legislative counsel. It conforms with some of the language that's currently in our ethics law that just says that the employee can't state their opinion as their position. So this gives the employees the right to engage in political activities outside of work, so that they just because they work for the nation doesn't mean they lose their voice in the direction of their nation. I think that this is incredibly important. Section G on reporting, employees have a right to report and or convey concern about harassment of any kind, improper workplace relations, discrimination, or violations of Osage law, violation of federal law, abuse, or unfair employment practices. Again, I don't think our policies currently discourage that, but it's important to establish that in law. Workforce advancement. The nation must maintain policies that encourage employees and allow them to achieve advancement in the workplace whenever possible and where merited. Employee race, age, gender discrimination, religious affiliation, or nationality shall not be used to hinder or regress an employee's position within the nation. We should always want what is best for all of our employees. And I think that by putting this in law, we guarantee that our policies adhere to that. With regard to workplace safety, employees have a right to perform their duties in an environment that is safe from occupational hazard and with regard to their inherent sense of security. This one can get pretty fun. seeing some of the ways that the nation has solved some of the problems. Have you ever witnessed us get a refrigerator off the second floor of a building? It's a pretty neat thing to watch. I think that it's important to have a minimum standard of workplace safety so that our employees aren't worried about how they're going to get a refrigerator off the second floor of this building. Going back to E, the indoor air requirements, one thing that we haven't really addressed is the all oxygenation offices shall be kept free of moisture, mold, and mildew. This should hit home with our branch of government in both locations. These are minimum standards. These are not setting the policy in law. These are standards that our executive branch policies and legislative branch, judicial branch policies must adhere to.
Any question? Congressman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you know, listening to you read through all this, I was just thinking initially in this part of the employee handbook.
A lot of it is. I agree.
That's policy.
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to solidify it with law.
No, sir.
Congressman Potts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's specific to Section 4. The executive policy can change at any time. That's a function of the executive branch. So I'm not trying to set this in policy. This isn't replacing our employee handbook. This establishes that their executive branch policies must adhere to these minimum standards. It says that you can't change a policy at any time to violate any of these rights that are established by Osage law. So, to clarify one more time, not specific to you, Mr. Speaker, this is not putting policy in Osage law. This is establishing minimum standards that all policies are to adhere to.
Congressman Mike.
So this is directed to the sponsor. So you said you could adjust those temperatures and then maybe we can pass this on out.
More than happy to do that, sir.
Congresswoman Pratt.
I don't know. I would just say that this would, to me, it would take a lot more discussion. But if you all are going to do that for the rest of the session, then okay, I'll make sure I'm here. Because I don't know that we all agree on a lot of that stuff. Like, I was trying to look it up, but I mean, this, we're our own tribal government. That's the major part there, is that we can pull out the state, the like federal government guidelines and this and that, but we can set them. Just like the Cherokee Nation, they said you have to be Cherokee in order to hold the supervisory position in their nation. So there are other tribal members who were let go. We can do that. I believe that we can do that. That's what we can say. That's what we want to do. We want, you have to be Osage to hold a supervisory position. And then as far as the temperature in the room, like, there are some people who have worked under conditions. I, for one, Congressman Maker, served in the United States Army. I mean, I'm not, I might feel like, yeah, get your cool rag, you'll be all right, and keep working. I mean, some of us, I mean, I just think that we have a differences of opinion on the temperature of the room. Like, it can't be above whatever. So, and I think, I don't know, I just think overall, like, just like Speaker Tillman stated, I think that they're plenty capable of making those decisions. And again, if we're going to sit here and work on this, though, and go line by line, then I think that it's, everyone should be sure to be here and weigh in on this, because I think we're going to have a lot of differences of opinion.
Congresswoman Goodfox.
Well, some of the reasons that you gave are actually reasons, and I'm keeping an open mind, that I think that these things do fall within the executive branch. It was really unfortunate that the air conditioning went out, and in the Welcome Center, a new building, it happens, and it was hot and people had to stay there and work. That, it is unfortunate. The catch-22 is that if someone from 3 hours down south who lives in the state of Oklahoma and can get a tribal tag through us makes a drive 3 hours up here to get it, to only find that the tax commission is closed for the day, don't think that that's not going to be a complaint, because it sure will be. Sometimes things go out, heat, air, electric's on and off, and the show's got to go on, because we are a government here to serve all Osage people, and they come up here, whether we think so or not. There's, you know, so we're here, we're required to be here for session and special sessions, but all the days that these offices are empty, they're still doing work up there. They're serving people with tags. They're serving people that need tags. Their CDIB is still going and issuing membership cards. And there are going to be those few certain times that, yes, something may go out and it's an uncomfortable situation, and our employees are going to have to, they're going to have to get through their day to keep serving the Osage people. So your argument for why this needs to be put in law actually just, it's reiterated my opinion on why this doesn't need to be set in law. It didn't sway me to your side. It actually pushed me more to where I was thinking, this is going above and beyond what this branch needs to be doing. And I would suggest that, I mean, I'm sure executive is listening in now, and if there are areas that they need to tweak in their policies and procedures, I'm sure this is, they're going to look at them now if they haven't already. But I disagree. I think that our executive branch, in the time that I have been here, no matter who is in office, has always done a good job of taking care of the employees. And I believe that. Since I've been in this seat since 2010, I truly believe that each executive office that has had someone up there in their capacity as chief, assistant chief, has done a good job. So we've got till 6 to talk this out, but I'm not changing my mind on it.
Congresswoman Whitehorn.
My support of this bill isn't in any way to say that I don't think the executive, any executive administration, hasn't done their job. So I want to get that out on the table right now. That's not why I support this bill. If this body does not write employment protection law, if we don't do that, there's not to be any who does at this nation. That's my question. I believe that it is the duty and obligation of this body to write employment protection law just as much as it is to write an employment system that is based on merit principles, because that's what our branch of government does. So I'm going to finish again. I don't support this because I think any administration has done a bad job or hasn't tried to correct issues or employments, but having a law in place ensures our employees that they have protection. And that's why I support it, not because I think people have done a bad job. And it's our obligation.
Colson Paltz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I can echo that as well. I didn't write this because I thought anybody has done a bad job. I wrote it because exactly the reason Congresswoman Whitehorn has stated. These are issues that need to be addressed, that can be addressed by our body. And I agree with Congresswoman Pratt. The Cherokees have decided something like this. Guess where they put it? In law. The Chickasaws have decided something like this. Guess where they put it? In law. I'm not saying that this has to be everybody's minimum standard, but I started the process because there need to be minimum standards that we can all get behind. That we can say when you come work for the Osage Nation, you've at least got this, regardless of what an executive branch policy says. These are rights that you have as an employee of the Osage Nation.
Congressman Walker.
Motion to postpone ONCA 1985 to the call of the chair.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
A motion to adjourn and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
You're adjourned.